Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, transhumanism and fictional robots.
Transhumanism is always taking the human being experience to the next level through technology. It'd be anything from exoskeleton suits to brain implants. It, you know, you're probably looking at, in the next 10 to 15 years, being able to upload large chunks of your brain into a kind of a consciousness of some sort in the cloud. This is where a lot of the stuff gets really fuzzy. And it's, you know, we're all in the Wild West. Nobody knows where the laws are going to end up. I mean, I think death, the version of death, is definitely going to change as we get into the future.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It helps out the show. And we just like to hear from you. So leave us a comment on the app you're listening to, or leave us a voicemail at 316-519-7719. So our first guest is a leader in the transhumanist movement. He is a published author who has wrote extensively on transhumanism. He's a futurist, and he's also ran for political office, both governor of California and president of the United States. And he believes that transhumanism will go mainstream this decade as we continue to bring about new technologies that could make us more than just human. This is transhumanist Zoltan Eastvan. Real quick, I have to apologize. I did something to parts of the audio in this interview that make it sound computerized, and I just could not figure out how to fix it. So please bear with me, because I think the things that Zoltan talks about are very interesting and definitely something that I think that we have to think about moving forward. The word transhumanism, like, what does that mean to you?
Really, what it is nowadays, transhumanism is a social movement of many millions of people around the world that want to use science and technology to radically modify the human body, modify the human mind. It'd be anything from exoskeleton suits to brain implants, even things like driverless cars or robots inside your house. But transhumanism is always taking the human being experience to the next level through technology.
I guess the question that jumps out immediately, right? Like, if we're modifying and changing ourselves, our bodies, are we fundamentally changing who we are? Or is this kind of just the next step in our evolution?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, people are always worried in transhumanism that we're going to become some kind of cyborg entity and be so different. But I don't think we're going to lose our inherent values. I think the thing you and I value right now is that, well, you know, we're kind to one another. We care about each other. We have each other's best interests involved. I think a lot of the mutual ethics and morals will probably pass on no matter what type of things the human being becomes in the next 100 or 1,000 years or whatever it is. So even if I put a bunch of chip implants in my brain and I have a cyborg arm and a synthetic, heart and prosthetic leg, I don't think that's going to fundamentally change me much. Maybe when I upload my mind into, for example, an artificial intelligence, that will become something substantially different. But even then, I still think I'm going to retain my core values because I don't want to lose those. So even if transhumanism does change us, I don't think we lose a lot of what it means to be a human being.
How close are we to this, right? Like, we, you know, the thing that I think of, I'm a Star Wars person, so I think of like Luke losing his hand and he gets the robotic hand. I feel like people would be okay with that, but how close are we to the idea of like, I'm going to upload my consciousness into the cloud? Like, where are we in that kind of possession of this becoming a reality?
Sure. Well, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago, they had the first telepathy between a person and France and India, where they said hello to each other through the mind using brainwave reading headsets. Today, you can basically read a novel using this type of brainwave interface technology. So, I mean, it's completely like just gone through the roof and how fast it's increasing. So if you take that trajectory of science, you know, technology out, it, you know, you're probably looking at, in the next 10 to 15 years, being able to upload large chunks of your brain into a kind of a consciousness of some sort in the cloud, at least one that mimics you very closely. But is that actually you? I think that's still 30 to 50 years away, so we're able to just have like a perfect identical version of ourselves.
Are we ready for that though?
Well, I mean, that's the million-dollar question. And the answer is probably no. You know, I'm currently a graduate student at the University of Oxford, and a lot of the ethicists are in the philosophy department where I'm at are worrying about these issues. And most people don't think we are, because technology has increased so much faster than morality, than the development of morality, and so much faster also in terms of politics. This is why you have, you know, presidential candidates in debates. They never talk about artificial intelligence. They never talk about genetic evidence. They never talk about radically enhancing the human being, because it's just too wild. It'll cost them votes. But the reality is, in Silicon Valley, this is all they do, all they talk about. This is where the biggest companies in the world are, where all the money is. So, yes, we're probably not ready for a lot of this stuff, but because capitalism works the way it does, it's probably going to come. So the big question is really, what can we do? And that, you know, we just need more ethicists to get involved and more politicians to really speak their mind, to try to come up with regulatory framework for a lot of these wild and, you know, absolutely insane ideas that are out there that are going to happen in the next 10 to 20 years.
I hope this doesn't come off as rude or offensive or anything like that, but I'll just be direct to kind of get the point across in my mind, right? Like 10, 20 years ago, if you came forward and I was hearing this, I'd be like, this guy, what are you talking about? Now I'm like, whoa, we got to figure this out. Is there any worry in your mind that, like, by the time we finally do this, it's too late?
Well, to be honest with you, the big worry is not about whether we do this too late. The biggest worry is who does it first? Because in the last 10 years, I've seen China take the lead in a lot of these technologies. And one of the reasons is because China is a secular nation. They don't have a kind of a Judeo-Christian framework that would, for example, stop them from doing genetic editing or stop them from trying to create a cyborg person with an AI mind, these kinds of things. They don't have those same kind of cultural baggage that the United States and other Western countries have. And so the question isn't, in my mind, so much should we do it? The question is, who does it first? And who does it first is actually going to kind of lead the world and the way forward. So we have to be very, you know, even Vladimir Putin has said from Russia that, you know, whoever controls AI is going to end up controlling the world. The last thing we want is him to think like that and control an AI. We have to get our politicians to pick up this ball. Whether we like these radical technologies like genetic editing and artificial intelligence, we better be the first ones to create it, the first ones to lead it forward in the world, because it's much better if democracy leads it than, let's say, a totalitarian government like China.
You talked about this a little bit, the idea of religion getting into it, right? And that is a thing in the United States, to put it lightly, right? Like, how can we adjust the idea that, no, but God created us this way. You're messing with this. You're messing with him.
Yeah, no, you know, as I've traveled across the country talking to people about technology and transhumanism specifically, it really is divided along lines of religion. Most people think, and most Christians think, the body is a temple created by God, and that temple is not to be messed with. Whereas transhumanists believe that we can overcome death, we can have godlike characteristics through technology, we can overcome these things. And then somewhere in between is everyone else, you know, who's like, well, we like, you know, modern medicine. And if we lose an arm, for example, fighting in a war in Afghanistan, we'd like that person to have a robotic arm so that they can play the piano again or hold their wife or grab a beer or whatever it is. So somewhere in between, we have to find the middle ground. What I try to tell people is that, you know, if Jesus was going around the world healing people, healing the sick, making the blind see, these are very transhumanist traits. I mean, transhumanism is leading the charge to overcome blindness. Transhumanism has already 100% overcome deafness because we have cochlear implants if people want to have them. So, you know, if you look at it from a medical perspective, especially helping disabled people, senior citizens, then I think a lot of Christians will accept transhumanism as a proper method forward. But you just have to be careful if you leave out the godlike stuff. As soon as you start talking about godlike stuff and becoming enhanced, you know, like beings, that, you know, then I think a lot of people get scared. So I try to tone it down a little bit, unless I'm trying to cause a ruckus, to get more and more people interested in the movement. Because in the end of the day, we're just interested in people's health and their ability to live the best life. And sometimes that best life is going to be filled with technology.
this may be kind of pie in the sky stuff, right? But does this get really complicated in the sense that, look, the Supreme Court has said that corporations are people. If I've got a robotic left arm, is that a person? Does it have rights that aren't, that are different from mine? Who owns that arm? Do I own the arm? Does the corporation who owned, who made the arm, own the arm? Like, how does, how's that going to work?
Yeah. And in an emergency, who controls that arm?
Right.
Will the government have some kind of overrides, you know, thing? And you're just about to, like, do something, you know? I mean, yeah, this is, that's why I said again and again to young people going into the world, what professions did I say, go into cybersecurity, because whatever happens, technology is increasing. We're going to need more and more autonomy from people that control this technology. But I think, you know, it'll probably be like your iPhone, where you own the phone to some extent. You have all the privileges over it, whatever technology it is. And you know, you could utilize it in that way. But then, you know, there are a lot of people that are already having implants put inside their body and whatnot. And yes, they own the actual implant, but they don't own the technology. And that technology can then be upgraded while it's in your body just through Wi-Fi signals and whatnot. And this becomes a very challenging scenario of privacy, ownership, and you know, the new world, I guess. But I think as long as we maintain our sense of ownership, self-ownership, I think we're going to be fine. We're just going to insist that the technology we put inside ourselves actually belongs to us. But that becomes a little tricky, because now you have, you know, for example, Alexa will record a conversation of a husband and wife and then use that in a divorce court or something. That's, you know, wild. This is where a lot of the stuff gets really fuzzy. And it's, you know, we're all in the Wild West. Nobody knows where the laws are going to end up. I wrote about a piece where a woman claimed that she was raped in virtual reality, and that the rape was a real rape in terms of legal justice for that person. This story happened in Australia. The brand new ideas that no court has any laws in the books for. So we're writing history as you know, as it happens here in many ways.
When we kind of get into this, right, like how can we balance the fairness aspect of it in the rich people are going to have the bionic implants and the lower income people, well, you got nothing. Sorry, man. Right? Like, how do you kind of balance the societal inequities of all of that as we get going, where some people have this and other people, you don't?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my primary concerns. And I just hope I'm not going to end up being an advocate for some transhumanist movement that really leaves the world a giant dystopia, you know, in 50 years. You know, I'm a big supporter of something called a universal basic income for the very reason that I just think if you need to create a floor for people to at least have enough to eat and shelter and the kinds of in healthcare and things like that. But outside of that, I think it's really up to a lot of the very rich people, the billionaires, and the government to try to make sure that the technology is spread evenly across the site. The good thing, though, is that like a cell phone technology over time does become increasingly very cheap. And even, you know, in the most remote villages in Africa, people have cell phones. What they still don't have, though, is clean water or enough food. So I'm hopeful that technology will, the transhumanist technology will make its way through every level of society. That doesn't mean, though, that we're going to have equality, and it doesn't mean we're going to have a good, just, fair society. That requires people, billionaires, government regulation, people making solid, hard decisions that may take some money off the top line, but really help out even the class of society so we're on a better plane.
Where is the kind of, like, we're based in the United States, and most of our audience is in the United States, but we have listeners all over the place. Where do kind of countries and areas, like, where do they rank in terms of, all right, they've got the best scientific development, they've got the best societal, like, who's kind of at the forefront of this, and where does, like, the U.S. rank in kind of it?
Well, I mean, ground zero for transhumanism and this technology is still Silicon Valley. There's no question that they're leading the charge. But I would say China is catching up very quickly. They made a massive, you know, national declaration to develop AI by 2030, and they may end up surpassing us. We've been going back and forth on who has the fastest supercomputer every year. Like, they take us over, we take them over. On another hand, there's a lot of weird stuff happening, like, a lot of biotechnology companies are no longer doing their experiments in the United States because the the process is like 8 to 10 years to even get a drug through the pipeline. So what they do is they'll go down to Honduras, or they'll go down to El Salvador, or they'll go to somewhere in Eastern Europe, and they'll do the trials, which will take half or a quarter of the time. And then those companies will essentially move there, but still have the drugs come out. These are radical drugs that can maybe cure cancer or what, hepatitis, whatever. So that's happening too. So it's not even really, you know, where transhumanists are trying to start the companies and be located. A lot of times it's they go for the environment, business environment that's simplest to them, and then try to utilize that so that that's the best place for them to develop their companies.
Right. We've talked a lot about the kind of the benefits of this, I guess. Like, what are the, what do you, when you look at it, like, man, we've really got to make sure this doesn't happen.
The benefits are innumerable. I mean, transhumanism will make people live longer. It will bring more prosperity to their lives. I mean, science and technology have a really great history. If you look back hundreds of years, like, we just don't die from cavities anymore. People used to die all the time from an infection from a cavity. So science and technology has a really good history of making people live better, longer, and with more prosperity. And so we believe transhumanism will continue in that vein. Therefore, it should be supported. The question, though, is some of these technologies are so radical, like artificial intelligence controlling nuclear weapons, for example, or genetic editing, where you can genetically edit yourself to have a smarter brain than your neighbor. Is that fair? You know? Especially if you can afford it and he can't, you know. So these are some of the more fundamental questions I think ethicists, philosophers, and transhumanists have to address before they sort of happen. But I think that's the big dilemma right now happening in the world, is to figure that all out.
Are you ready for some harder/listener-submitted questions?
Yes, of course.
Your vision of the future, right? Like, when you look at what you think the future could be, how far away do you think that we are from that right now?
Well, you know, it really changes. I think I tend to think of it in terms of 10 to 15 years and then 30 to 50 and 100 years. So 10 to 15 years, we got some big progress happening on the horizon with life extension. That means 3D vital printing organs, artificial hearts, genetic editing therapy so that we don't get, you can't get HIV, or maybe you can even make it so you can't get monkeypox, things like that. So I think that's the 10, 15-year window where we develop a lot of things to make us live better. But that's not very exciting. I think what really gets exciting is when you start talking about uploading your consciousness, something like I mentioned earlier, probably 20 to 40 years away, we will start experimenting with that. People will start trying to do that stuff. But it gets really wild when you get to the 100-year window, because then you're either virtual avatars living in machines, maybe you're off in space, maybe you have multiple cells. You know, like, it's not just, don't think yourself, just you upload yourself and then you're in the machine. Actually, your human body will almost certainly still be here. And when you upload yourself, you may not just upload one version of yourself. You may have 100 copies, might be 100 Zoltans running around doing his thing. And so that becomes like, what's your family then with all these little mini-me's? But, you know, the transhumanist world is really bizarre when you start taking it out that many years, because AI and consciousness expansion, your brain is probably going to have, you know, 1,000 or 5,000 times more intelligence than we have now, maybe 1,000,000 times, and progressing at a much quicker rate than before. If you think what's happening with technology now is quick, just imagine how Moore's Law is going to apply in 30 or 40 years when technology is still doubling. So I think we're all at some point have to put in implants or have brainwave headsets that connect us to all the machines around us just for convenience sake. But I think, you know, there'll always probably be a human left over somewhere on planet Earth. But if you don't embrace technology, there's no question you're going to get left behind. And I think on a final note, the 30 to 50 year future also involves getting off planet. You see people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos pushing these space companies. We're just at the very beginning of this. We want to create bodies that are able to withstand pressures outside Earth's system, environmental system, so that we can go off planet. And not just outside our solar, inside our solar system, but really into the galaxies. See if there's other life out there. See if anything else is worth humanity's time to kind of ponder. So I think getting off planet is going to be another huge transhumanist mission.
You know, one of the things that I've always seen about is like the idea of kind of being immortal. And for me personally, I guess I'll ask this from a personal, like, I don't really want to be immortal. Do you think that we could really handle that? The idea of living forever?
I also am afraid of immortality. I'm not sure. You know, I want to have the ability to overcome death, and the specter of death is a huge negative influence in my life. But I also want to retain the freedom to end my life if I want. And maybe, you know, you have to understand, like, it's not just, there's even transhumanist technologies like cryonics out there where you could be brought back to life even today at some other point in the future if they develop the science. And then you choose to live 10 more years and say, yeah, this isn't for me and I want to go back to sleep. I mean, I think death, the version of death, is definitely going to change as we get into the future. We may, like, wake up every 100 years, check in, and then decide it's not for us. And some people may decide to, like, say, look, you can never bring me back or never resurrect me or completely take away, so I'm just ashes or something like that. But honestly, with 3D printing technology and the different scanning of your brain, we can already start to scan memories. So if you can start doing that, you can 3D print out anything, including the exact replica of yourself. And you may say, oh, it's not me. But that you won't know that. It'll still 100% think it's you. And so you get into this weird, you know, like Hollywood time machine kind of, I guess, movie scape where no one's really sure what is real and who you are. But the reality is you're probably going to want to live and experience it, even if you don't want to live forever. So I like the idea of living as long as possible, but I also like the idea of having the possibility to say no to living forever. Again, I'm not even sure that's possible given the way that we're going to have these scanning technologies and ability to 3D bioprint ourselves. There may have to be do not resurrect clauses in our wills here in the next 50 or 100 years, because everybody will be able to be brought back to life, at least as they were upon their moment of death, just because we've scanned down to the atomic level what every single memory and brain component and blood vessel was in their body.
I don't like the idea of living forever, but I do like the idea of, like, being able to check in every 100 years. Like, that would be pretty cool. Then I'd be worried about somebody, like, accidentally deleting the server one day or something like that. 2024 is coming, man. You gonna go for it again?
So, you know, I'm currently a graduate student at the University of Oxford. I think I'm going to finish that degree before I run for office again. It's given me a lot of insight into the academic world. It's given me more credibility to being there. So I doubt I'm going to run in 2024. You know, I am watching politics, though. I'm watching the Forward Party, wondering if maybe there's going to be some type of candidacy possibilities there and what Andrew Yang has done. I'm not really, this moment, siding with any single party at the moment because I'm more of a science candidate. But it is possible I would run again in 2028. And I probably almost certainly will. I just kind of feel like I should take care of my graduate studies first and take a break. I run a couple campaigns. They all did pretty well. But sometimes it's best to amass your resources, gain a little bit more popularity in your field, and then try to strike.
What do you think of, like, look, I feel like one of the early ventures into this, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't really know that much about this stuff, but I feel like one of the early ventures is kind of the metaverse. And that seems to have flopped pretty hard, at least right now. Do you think that, is that a sign that this idea as a whole is not viable, or just that we're not ready, or just that we don't like Facebook? I guess, what do you kind of think about the whole metaverse idea?
Well, to begin with, I think, you know, if we associate with Facebook, we're not going to like it. Facebook is, in my opinion, on the decline just because of management issues and just because of perception issues, right? You know, I do think virtual reality holds huge promise, though. I think another problem with virtual reality is kind of being tied into the crypto and blockchain market and whatnot. And look, that's fine. That's all very interesting stuff. But a lot of that hasn't actually had any practical value. I just recently gave a speech, though, in Second Life. It's a group called Spatial, and it was great. And then about 100 people showed up, and I was invited to this event. And I thought, wow, that's a lot easier than having to fly to Europe to give a 30-minute talk and doing that. So I see a huge future in the virtual world just because the convenience sake. But they haven't made it enough where I really experience it even remotely the same as the physical world. So until they do that, maybe that'll be HapNet suits where, you know, you really put on full gear and it's not just the goggles. I don't know exactly what it is that's going to make it. Or maybe it's going to be some kind of, like, you know, little beam that shows on you so you can be in the virtual world that measures all your movements. And that way you can start immersing yourself and you feel like you're immersed. I've done some virtual reality stuff like jumping off buildings and, you know, that actually feel incredibly real. So if they can do that, then I think the metaverse will take off. But right now I feel it's just still a little too geeky. And it doesn't feel that real to me. So I like the real world still. But, you know, they're getting better every year at doing that. And hopefully Metaverse will not really be a Facebook association, but just become, a technology association through all these other companies. And then I think we'll be more, inclined to adapt it. But it has had a little bit of a shaky start. But, you know, a lot of these technologies have shaky starts. And then all of a sudden they finally figure out their proof.
I interviewed an ice climber one time, and the thing that he said is like, everybody thinks you're an idiot until they don't. And that's usually a sign that you're kind of on the right track, right? Like he said, if everybody thought I was crazy, then it's probably going to be worth me doing it.
No. And this is happening all over. You know, like 10 years ago when I started really promoting transhumanism, a lot of people were like, oh my God, this guy's out of his mind. And now that AI and all these other things, like, for example, Yale University is reanimating pig brains with electrodes. They're recreating consciousness that on brain mass looks basically identical to the real consciousness of a living pig brain. So all of a sudden, we have another way, for example, to overcome death potentially. And these are real experiments that are already taking place. If you had told somebody that just 15 years ago, they would have thought that was impossible and that was wacko and, you know, something crazy. So it always seems crazy, but you give something 10, 20, 30 years and really it catches up and all of a sudden, lo and behold, you know, we're in the transhumanist age.
I'll be completely honest. When we first started this podcast 4 years ago, we interviewed a guy who was a futurist and he talked about transhumanism. And I left being like, this guy's kind of crazy. And now I feel like, man, we better figure this out pretty fast because it's coming quick, right?
Yeah. No, and let me just tell you, like the philosophy department at University of Oxford, if you had said 20 years ago, they would be debating artificial intelligence all day long and the ethics of it. That would have seemed completely insane to the oldest philosophy department in the world. And yet now today, I can tell you, the ethics of artificial intelligence are like literally on the tip of everyone's tongue there because they realize if you want to make a difference in the world of philosophy, in the world of where humanity is going, this is where expertise is needed. And there are massive change, structural changes like that happening all around the world in all different types of, you know, universities, nonprofits, governments, as people start grappling with the fact that, wow, technology is really the driver of the world and also of culture as well as the military. So whoever's not in control of that, whoever's not dealing directly with that is really missing the boat and will be left behind.
Yeah. I interviewed a guy one time who was, I think he was a military general. He's like, you got two choices, get on the tank or get run over by the tank.
that's a good one. Yeah, I like that.
Last thing, man. Like if you were to kind of look at movies, TV shows, video games, all kinds of, what vision of which one would you say like, ooh, I think they got it right. Like that's probably what it would really be like.
You know, there's nothing we have. First off, I'm a huge fan of The Matrix, and I do think that there's a very strong chance that with mind uploading, we will come to a premise where you actually can live inside virtual worlds, hopefully not powered by machines. I think actually something very similar to Star Trek is probably the most likely, where we will eventually have genetic editing capabilities to create all sorts of creatures. Those creatures will span out around the universe. And then, you know, humans will probably be cyborgs and interact. Machines may actually go around the world and interact with them and have adventures and whatnot. And that's not that different than Star Wars. But I think if you have to ask me what's one of the most interesting movies out there right now, it's the movie Her. And Her is the story of an AI that develops but decides it doesn't want to hang out with the human beings and ultimately leaves. And that's a very humbling, I think, thought. It could easily happen to people, even if we have minds that are sort of cyborg or have chip implants to try to connect with AI. Artificial intelligence in here in 20, 30, 40 years may just say, you know, we're going to leave you and go to the singularity. We're just not interested in your human race. It's almost like us looking at ants. You don't really take much of a care of ants because we just don't consider their brains worth, you know, focusing on, except if you're an ant person or whatever. But I think at some point AI becomes so smart, they may not care about our little 3 pounds meat that we carry on our shoulders. It's just not sophisticated enough for them. And they will also leave us behind. So I think the movie Her is an excellent example of how technology could be very humbling for humanity in the long run.
That's pretty much all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that you think that we missed, or you know, people want to get involved, want to learn more? What should they do?
Well, the one thing is, there was a documentary, "Immortality or Bust," that Amazon Prime has picked up. That was made on my 2016 presidential campaign, but it's really a movie about came out recently in 2020 about transhumanism as a whole. And I go around in a giant bus and visit everybody. All these transhumanists across the country, exploring their personalities and trying to figure out, you know, where the world's going to go. So, if you have a chance, go to Amazon Prime and or a lot of other places have it and watch "Immortality or Bust." And other than that, if you're interested in transhumanism, Facebook, despite my not liking Facebook very much, has a ton of groups, a lot of Twitter groups as well now, or Twitter followers on transhumanism. Or just Google it, and you'll find a lot of stuff. I have a ton of books out there, 8 books, Transhumanist Wager, and whatever, so you can read some of my work. But "Immortality or Bust," the documentary, it's just an hour and a half. It's a really fun way to explore transhumanism because we had a giant bus that was shaped like a coffin that we drove all across the country. And that's how we campaigned for transhumanism during one of my presidential campaigns.
I want to thank Zoltan so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. And we have also included his information in the episode description. So one of our goals moving forward is to try and make this podcast a lot more interactive. And part of that is telling you about some podcasts that we really think are worth a listen. One of these is On the Edge with Andrew Gold. He's a former BBC journalist, and he interviews some of the world's most extreme and controversial people. Everyone from psychopaths, ex-Scientologists, mafia detectives, undercover officers, drug dealers. There are some really interesting people. So if you'd really like to go inside and find out what makes some of the darkest minds tick, On the Edge with Andrew Gold is a great show. I personally like The Coffin Confessor, both of those episodes, because that was something that I had never heard of before. And look, I really enjoyed this show, and if you get a chance, check it out. I think you will as well. So check out On the Edge with Andrew Gold on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, now let's bring in John Schull and get to the pointless part of the show.
Would you want to be a cyborg or a robot? Like if they said, all right, we can replace this with a robot part. Would you be cool with that?
I mean, perverted 12-year-old John says, of course, give me a robotic something. I mean, of course, why wouldn't I? I mean, as long as I can have full control over whatever limb is going to be a cyborg, I mean, I don't need it turning on itself.
Okay, but we're not talking about like where somebody loses it and then they get a prosthetic. I mean, hey, this new model is available. You going to trade in the left arm? Like, would you do that? Would you get it? Would you upgrade yourself?
I would, but you know what? The more I think about it, I don't think I would upgrade what you want to jump to, say, first. Like, everyone goes, yeah, I want the arm or maybe the, you know, maybe like an awesome eye or something. I think I would do like a back. Like, give me a back that doesn't hurt and that I'm not going to have any pain in. Like, that'd be awesome.
I wouldn't really want to replace the parts of me that I feel dictate my sensations with the world, like my hands and feet, arms, legs, eyes, senses.
Penis.
But in terms of like my back, like, yeah, or my knees, that's an easy choice. Shoulders, like, yeah, replace that tomorrow.
So at what age, though, what age do you think you would start to consider the replacement?
40.
Or the upgrade, I guess, the upgrade.
As soon as I started to decline. Soon as I was physically starting to like, as soon as things physically started to hurt a little bit or like this isn't working the way that it used to, which I would say that I'm at that age now where like I'll go to jump playing with my kids and like, wait a minute, that's a lot different. I would replace that now.
I would probably do it right around 40.
What about like uploading yourself to the cloud? Could you be like a fully digital person? Like, upload your consciousness.
So my consciousness, even when physical me is gone, my consciousness would still be around for others to like look at forever, right?
Yeah.
Well, I feel bad for whoever would see those images. Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, I'm remember, was it a decade ago or whatever, when the cloud was really becoming a thing and everybody was like, don't put pictures in there. Don't put this in there. They're going to get hacked and leaked. And, I'm not scared of that at all. I mean, bring on the hackers. I don't give a shit. No one gives a shit about like, if regular person nudes are hacked, right? Like they're not looking for that on my phone.
This is what worries me, I think, ultimately about this kind of technology, right? Is that we started out trying to have this philosophical discussion, and then ultimately it came down to nudes in the cloud, right? Like we can already see this with basically any technology that we have, is that we are going to go to the most default use of it that we can, which is basically sex. Like we're going to upload ourselves to the cloud and we're not going to do it to trans, you know, we're not going to do it to explore galaxies or universes or any kind of highfalutin thing. No, we're going to use it for basically porn.
Well, I mean, I think that if you think of most technology, that is ultimately what it ends up being a vessel for.
Well, we are still human beings at the end of it, right? And like we have one basic function that is hardwired into us. We're going to find a way to do that, whichever method that is.
I think I would only want to live forever, maybe as an observer, you know, just no one bother me, but I get to see history and time pass.
Yeah, I think my ultimate answer would be I want to be thawed out every 25 years, live for a year, then go back to sleep. All right. That was my question.
All right. Well, let's move on to some shout-outs.
Shout-outs.
We're going to make this nice and easy and quick today. So, Trey Regar, Jennifer Larson, Jessica Cunningham, Jonah Quinn, Dan Kusel, Katrina Jorgensen, Stevie Jalea, David Ancelet, and Zach Hemmerl. You all get the shout outs for today. Appreciate everyone like usual.
Do you have two shirts on? Just real quick.
Yes, I do. I do have two shirts on.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Let's see. First question for you is, was that all you had on that? Were you not going to crack some joke?
I just couldn't tell what was going on. I wasn't sure if you had two shirts on or one.
I have a polo and then an undershirt on underneath that. So, for those of you who can't see this. All right. Would you give up your favorite meal for life or have to eat your favorite meal every day for a year?
Well, I mean, I pretty much do that already. So I would easily just eat my favorite meal every day for a year.
What is it? What is your favorite meal?
Tacos. Technically a burrito, but I feel more like it's a taco. I do not really distinguish in my mind the difference between a taco, a burrito, and an enchilada. I understand that they are different things, but in my mind, they are all exactly the same. It is meat, cheese, beans, sour cream, maybe some vegetables wrapped in a flour product of some sort. I don't distinguish between tacos, burritos, and enchiladas. I don't mean that to be offensive in any way to people, but essentially they're all the same.
I'm not speechless too many times. I mean, that might be one of the more ignorant things you've ever said on this podcast.
Okay, so if I take a taco, wrap it in a burrito, and give it to you, you're going to be like, nope, that's a taco. I can tell the taste difference. Well, and if I took a burrito inside, put it in a taco shell, you'd be like, nope, I know that that's a burrito and a taco. He's just trying to fool me. You don't know the difference.
Yeah, I mean, burritos usually have rice, so I would know that right away. Tacos don't usually have rice. So that's one difference.
But I could take a burrito stuffing, put it in a taco, and you're not going to know the difference.
I think I would.
You're going to be like, who put a burrito in my taco?
Probably.
That's not true whatsoever. Maybe enchilada because you put something on top of it, but that's the only reason. Otherwise, it's all the same thing.
I just feel like you're going to get way too heated. So let's just move on. Second question for you. Which one of these would you rather do for the rest of your life? Eat with a spoon or eat with a fork for the rest of your life?
Well, you have to eat with a spoon. How are you going to eat soup with a fork?
Just drink it out of the bowl.
Right, but what if it's you can't do that? Right? The only choice you can make is fork or a spoon, I'm sorry. You can do everything that you can do with a fork, with a spoon, but you can't do everything that you can do with a spoon, with a fork.
I would
It's as
argue,
simple as that. Ramen noodles, anything.
I ramen noodles you can eat with a fork.
Not very well. It's better to eat with a spoon.
I mean, I would say actually that there's more benefits in a fork than a spoon.
No, there's more benefit. The spoon can carry things. How are you going to
So can
eat
a
peas
fork.
or corn? You know how long it's going to take you to
You know
eat
what?
corn
You know what? I had
with a
corn this
fork?
evening for dinner and I ate it with a fork. And I looked around and I was the only person at my dinner table eating it with a fork. And I thought maybe, just maybe, I'm the problem with a fork. And then now having this conversation with you, I'm gonna eat it with a fork for the rest of my life.
Right, I like that. And this is the back to the general theme that we talk about on this podcast is your refusal to acknowledge your own shortcomings. And you double down.
No, actually, can I break from this for 1 second and talk about one quick driving issue I had in
God,
the
this is
last
what
week?
I'm talking
It's
about
not my
every
fault.
single time.
This,
Nothing is
okay.
ever your fault. I'm not the one who should be using a, everyone else should use a fork.
All right.
What's the driving issue? And let me, I'll look at it. I will
All
be
right.
an impartial observer.
Well, I appreciate that. So I'm driving down a side
So
street.
upset.
I'm driving down a side street. There's a golf course on my left-hand side. You know, like people are golfing, right? Of course, as I'm just taking my time driving down the side street, somebody gets behind me and you can tell they gotta go somewhere.
They got to
So
get to the tee time.
sure.
I've
So
actually had this happen to me.
they're riding my butt. I get to a stop sign. I just stop. Like I just stop so I can look both ways, even though I probably didn't have to, but I mean that's what you're supposed to do. They honk at me. But here's the thing. Little did I know that we were right next to a tee box. So when they honked, it must have disturbed the whoever was on the tee box, 'cause all I hear is like yelling now. Like the golfer is yelling at the driver's back yelling back at the golfer, and I just drive away. I should have waited to see if anything came of it, 'cause they were
Yeah, you
still
should have stuck
yelling.
around.
I should have stuck around. But like that wasn't my fault. It just, like but thankfully the golfer, 'cause you know, if he didn't yell at the driver, who knows what they would have done? Probably ran me into traffic.
Man, how long were you stopped at the stop sign before he honked?
I mean, I literally had just I it was recent. I
Did
just
you full stop?
yeah, I fooled.
Okay, because there's safety precaution stop, which is like, man, you pretty much stop. And then there's this guy's on my ass. I'm gonna full stop like I'm legally required to do.
I know what you're doing. I know what you're trying to do. And it wasn't me trying to be an asshole. I mean, I stopped because it was a four-way stop sign by a golf course. So I thought it would be the
How many other, was there any cars coming from any other direction?
No, not even close.
Okay, so you asshole stopped a little bit.
Maybe. I mean, you
Yeah,
know,
so you
maybe.
assholes. Okay, how much did you asshole stop on a scale of 1 to 10? Be
I
honest.
mean, maybe a three. I mean, it wasn't anything over. I just made sure that I had come to a complete
Okay.
stop.
So if you're saying that it's a three, that probably means it's a five, which warrants the honk.
It's not my
Was it a
fault.
full, how big of a horn was it? Was it like a beep? Like an eh? Or was it like a
Yeah, the lab, the lab,
Was it a
the
reminder or was it like move asshole more?
yeah, it was like I'm tired of being behind you. Like move out of the way.
How fast were you going? What was the speed limit?
I don't know. It's between 20 and 25. I mean, I was going the speed limit, but I wasn't going above it, that's for sure.
It's not you like look, you are legally in the clear and you have a good argument to be like, what was I doing? But no, but first of all, I'm not going the speed limit in a residential area. I'm doing 10, 5
Yeah.
over easily. And I'm also not completely stopped. So you encouraged it. And I'm going to have to go ahead and say it in the blame of this 64.
That's I knew you were gonna find a way to turn it back. Then as I'm driving away, my focus turned to the golfer and I'm like, listen, it's a weekday morning.
Right. What are you
Like,
so upset about?
yeah, like what are you pissed off about? You're clearly not good or not that good because you're golfing on a weekday morning. I mean, Jesus.
Did anybody change their direction of travel in that, like, did the person in the car start to get out of the car? Did the golfer come off the tee box? Yeah. If that happened, then you should have stopped. One of my great regrets in life is I'm pretty sure I saw a road rage fight coming and I didn't stick around long enough to see it. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, there definitely was the golfer. Like the golfer came over to the fence and the car was still at the stop sign. Like, you know.
Okay. All right. Now that we've established that you were at fault.
Anyway, so pretty excited about this. I know you're not going to be excited about this probably, but second week in a row, we're trying something new here.
John's on the biggest roll of his life.
I know. So basically, we put something on Twitter on Monday afternoons, and you get to decide the topic in which we talk about. And this week it was House of the Dragon, the new Game of Thrones prequel series. Okay. What we had for lunch this morning, the NFL, and something else that I already forgot about. But I can tell you that House of the Dragon won overwhelmingly. And, you know, people must listen because we literally quadrupled our votes from last week. So check us out. Head over to Twitter Monday afternoons and vote. But anyways, getting back to House of the Dragon, I'm sure you have not seen it.
I saw it last night.
Oh, you did? Okay. So what, I mean, what are your thoughts? It's a prequel set 200 years before the show. It's about the Targaryens. What's your thoughts?
Needs to get a lot better. The difficulty is that mystique, I think, that really drew people in about Game of Thrones, like that first episode of what's going on here. There's a fantasy element to it that was cool. Like the White Walkers were cool. The dragons alone aren't going to do that, right? The White Walkers were new. The dragons, like, man, I've seen dragons. Like, I'm not impressed by seeing another dragon. I've seen it. And there's not that level of intrigue, like, because all the characters look kind of too much alike, and it's unclear who's who, and you're just waiting on somebody to die.
Well, there's no...
It's got to get a lot better.
There's no standout, like, character either, I feel. At least one didn't emerge from the first episode, other than the dragons. And it's like you kind of said, that was cool in Game of Thrones, you know, that series. But on this, it's like, we know you have dragons. Like, I want to know more about, like, where'd you get your hair from? You know, like,
right.
Tell me more about you, your kind.
That's what I think was so revolutionary about the original Game of Thrones, is that they pretty clearly established that Ned Stark was the main character. And like, okay, he's the main guy here. And then, if you don't know already, turn off for a second. Then they killed him. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Fucking killed him.
Well, shit, technically, they, you know, once again, spoiler alert, so you have a 1 second here. But in the first season of that, they kill him and the king. It's like, whoa, they kill both major male leads of the show.
Yeah, no, it didn't capture that.
Out of 5 stars, what are you giving the first episode? And will you watch
3.5?
And will you watch the second episode?
Oh, yeah, but 3.5. But I'm not interested looking forward to the next one. Like, all right.
I made a stupid mistake the other day. We lost power here for a little while, and my Fitbit also lost power, so I didn't get a chance to charge it. So it was stuck at the time that the power died, that, you know, that it ran out of power. So I put it on the next day, and I'm getting up to, like, I don't know, I think it was like 7,000 steps. I have a goal of 10,000 every day, and it hits, you know, I wonder why the time was off, right? It was like 11:57, 11:58. I'm like, well, it's only a couple hours behind, whatever, I won't mess with it right now. It hits 12 and it reset. So when its power died, it must have been like 7 or 8 at night or whatever. And then when I put it back on in the morning, I'm like, oh, you know, like I said, it's only a couple hours behind. And then it hit midnight and it reset. So I lost all my stats for the day.
Do you honestly think anyone is interested in that story?
Sure. I think people have had the same issues.
That is one of the things that I cannot stand when people are like telling me about, like, how many steps did you get? I don't care. That's one of the, we're going to do a top 5 things you don't care when people talk about. And their step challenge is got to be one of the highest on that list.
It's not a step challenge. I just told you how many steps I try to get a day. I didn't say, like.
How's that not a challenge?
I mean, I tell you, it works for me. It doesn't have to work for anybody. If it works for you, great.
For people who are listening who are younger in the 20s demographic, this is what your life is going to become. Or the most exciting thing that you're looking at on a daily basis is, well, how many steps am I going to get in today?
Listen, I got to tell you.
And he's looking at his Fitbit, excited. I bet you, do you tell your wife when you get a lot of steps? Are you like?
No, I don't. I actually don't really gloat at all. I wanted to tell the story on the podcast as we were talking about.
Listen, that was definitely a story. Let's
just cut it.
What's the most steps you've gotten in a day there?
Delete it. Most steps in a day, 24,000.
I'm more just depressed for us as an age group, 30s, 40s age group, that this is what we're now like.
I didn't say that's where I'm at. I just said a story.
My Fitbit reset itself in the middle of the day.
Hey, you know what? Now, you know, I was about to say another story. Let's just go on to the top five here. I'm getting
this
hot.
This is how you're headed straight for a midlife crisis, right? It's this kind of behavior that's going to take you right into a midlife crisis where you realized one day that like the most exciting thing was your Fitbit going wrong. And then you're going to take up like skydiving. Okay. Are you ready for our top five?
I am. This is harder than I thought. So
it's a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
So our top five is top five robots. What's your number five?
Bender from Futurama.
Are you serious?
I was.
That's my number five too. Bender.
Okay, good. Yeah, he's my number five then. Yep.
I think a five is the exact right place to put Bender.
Yeah, I think so as well. It's like I said, I'm not even sure I should have included him on the list. I mean, there's lots of good number fives, but
he's really come up the rankings, though, in the last decade.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
10 years ago, no way would you put him on there. But now it's like, Bender from Futurama. Which is that show canceled? They cancel it and restart it every year.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it's still going.
Okay.
My number four is the Terminator.
Might be a little high for the Terminator, in my opinion. I could see the Terminator being lower. I wouldn't argue if it was one or two spots lower. I can understand it.
It's just, man, there's so many. So, yeah. What's your number four?
The Sentinels from X-Men.
Okay.
If you grew up like I did, watching the X-Men animated series, the Sentinels came out, and the Sentinels were like, that was the greatest animated series of all time.
No, I mean, I get it. I think it's an honorable mention with all the other robots that are possible, but I think they're there. I mean, I have them on my honorable mention.
Okay. What's your number three then?
So my number three is, I have two. It's WALL-E and the Roomba. Figured you'd like that second one.
The Roomba. Yeah. Okay. The Roomba is like the first real personal robot that anybody has ever had.
Yep.
In some ways, if you said Roomba number one, I don't know if I would. I could kind of agree with you. Like, that's the first real experience with a robot that most people have. Like, there's a robot doing shit for you.
Yeah. Yep.
And it had like a little personality that you could give it. It was like a part of your house.
It was dumb as shit. They're still dumb as hell. But yeah, they are like I think they're the only universal robot that's distributed that you can buy like on a wide basis.
That's what I mean. You could make an argument that the Roomba should be number one.
It's tough. It's
that's a good call.
It's tough, man. What's your number
three? WALL-E's too high, though, for you. WALL-E is not. He doesn't have the kind of longevity, right? Like, he's got to be in a couple more movies before WALL-E gets in.
I mean, I would agree to a certain degree, but his usefulness and resourcefulness gets him. I have a lot of trash robots coming up, I think. So that's that's a theme.
My number three is Terminator. I think that's the appropriate place for Terminator, not number four. I think Terminator should be a little bit higher.
I mean, obviously, I dig it. I wasn't going to put it any higher than four. So,
okay, what's your number two?
Optimus Prime.
I'm interested to see what your number one is then. My number one is actually Optimus Prime. My number two is R2-D2.
That's my number one.
We have reversed.
Yeah, and really, I could reverse either, like 2-1, 1-2. But I'm going strictly based upon popularity than usefulness. Like, I mean, Optimus Prime, by far, he's a badass. He'll fight for you. I mean, he saves the world. R2-D2 is, you know, it is what it is. But I think on a terms of a popularity and knowing, I think more people could pick out R2-D2 than Optimus Prime.
I agree that more that R2-D2 is the more popular one, but Optimus Prime was that franchise, really. Like, R2-D2, if he's not there, not that big of a deal.
Ooh, that's tough.
You don't need R2-D2, but you have to have Optimus Prime, which is why I think Optimus Prime is number one.
You do have to have Optimus Prime, but to say that Star Wars could do without R2-D2, I don't know. That's a tough one. I can't agree with that.
I don't know what the difference between a robot, a cyborg, and an android are.
Well, now you just open up a case. We'll let everyone debate that. Because I'm not entirely sure either.
Okay, you go through your honorable mention while I look up what the difference between cyborg. All right.
Let's see here. So I have HAL 9000 from 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Okay.
So Jurner, that was the Mars rover of 1996 that gave the world its first kind of view of Mars. That was a huge deal. Data from Star Trek.
Data.
Whatever. Rosie from the Jetsons.
Those are good.
Bishop from Aliens.
Never seen that movie.
And Astro Boy.
Okay. I don't know if Mega Man is a robot, technically. I could throw Mega Man in there.
I mean, would you say Metroid from Metroid Prime is a robot? Or is that a cyborg?
No, that's a cyborg. Okay, so here's the difference. An android is a robot that is made to look and act like a human being. A cyborg is a living organism that has robotic or mechanical parts. So I don't think the Terminator is a cyborg.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously strictly metal. So yeah, it's not a cyborg, I don't think.
So the Terminator is actually an android, whereas RoboCop is a cyborg, is how I would define it.
RoboCop, great. Because
RoboCop's
movie.
Alive, right?
Yeah, he's a human that gets shot, then he's brought back to life as a kind of what we talked about earlier.
Do you know the name of the guy who was shot? Who's the actual, like, the human who became RoboCop?
Brian Anderson.
Is that right?
No, it's not right. I don't know. I should know. It's a disgrace. I don't know.
RoboCop. It was filmed in Detroit.
It was, yes. They tried to get a statue of him put up.
Now you're going to recognize it. Alex Murphy.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe. Leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. I think we really did a pretty good job of getting the top five robots. I think that those are the best ones. I could be wrong, but I think that we got some of the best ones. There's so many out there, though. So if there's one that you think, no, that should be in the top five, let us know. As always, would love to hear from you. Either comment on the podcast app that you're listening to, let us know on social media, or we've got that voicemail, 316-519-7719. I don't actually know if that's the right number, but it's the number that's stuck in my head. Either way, we've got the number linked in the episode description.